Illinois Senate voted to ban the product Tuesday.
In pop culture, sharks are always menacing humans, but Christopher Chin says in reality, it's the other way around.
Sharks have been around for 400 million years or more, and they have survived five major extinctions. But for the first time in history, they are in peril, and by our hand and in our lifetimes.
Chin is a diver and activist. He says tens of millions of sharks are killed every year to make shark fin soup. Typically, the fin is cut off while the shark is still alive. Then the shark is thrown back in the water, where it dies a quick and painful death. As coastal states have banned shark fins, Chicago's Chinatown has become a prime market for the product. That's why activists are seeking to make it illegal to possess them in Illinois. But as Republican Senator Matt Murphy of Palatine says, Illinois has a mixed record banning delicacies on the grounds of animal cruelty.
Just as the foie gras ban went away, this has the potential to make this chamber look a little silly.
The measure now goes to the governor. I'm Brian Mackey.
Cyclists in Champaign-Urbana will join bike enthusiasts across the globe tonight for the annual Worldwide Ride of Silence. It's a bike rally intended to raise awareness of cyclists on the road. The first such ride took place in Dallas in 2003 after endurance cyclist Larry Schwartz was killed by a passing vehicle on an empty road. The CU Ride of Silence will begin from the southwest lot of the U of I Assembly Hall parking lot tonight at 7. All bicyclists are welcome to join in the free ride, provided they ride no faster than 12 miles per hour, ride for no longer than an hour, and of course remain silent during the ride. Information is available at champaigncountybike.org. In sports, the Chicago Cubs host Philadelphia at 7:05 tonight. The Cards are in San Francisco at 9:15. The White Sox are in Los Angeles to take on the Angels at 9:05. There's more news all the time at will.illinois.edu. I'm Craig Cohen, Illinois Public Media News.
Support comes from The Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to music education, now offering private lesson instruction for students of all ages. They also feature guitars, amplifiers, digital pianos, software, and sound equipment in the Pro Sound Center at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. A cold front extending from northeast Indiana across central Illinois and into central Kansas will push south across the area today. However, it should exit Illinois by tonight. While most areas will remain dry, scattered thunderstorms could redevelop across southern portions of the state this afternoon. Slightly cooler air mass will then build into the region for midweek as another high-pressure ridge shifts into the Great Lakes. Today, expect mostly sunny skies and temperatures ranging from the lower 60s in northeastern Illinois to the mid-80s in southeastern Missouri. Low temperatures tonight will fall into the upper 40s and 50s across the nation's midsection. In Champaign-Urbana today, sunshine. The rest of today, the high around 75. Tonight, mostly clear and cool, the low near 45. Tomorrow, sunshine, the high 78. Thursday night, mostly clear, the low about 52. And sunny skies again Friday with the high around 83 degrees. Checking temperatures and conditions around the region at this hour. Clear skies pretty much everywhere. It's 71 degrees in Danville, 72 in Decatur. It's 72 as well in Jacksonville, 67 in Moline, and at Willard Airport in Champaign, 72 degrees. Winds out of the northeast at 14 miles an hour, gusting to 23 miles per hour. The relative humidity, pretty low, 31%, and the barometric pressure, 30.05 inches and rising. And outside our studios here in Urbana, it's 71 degrees. A bill authorizing new casinos and other expansions of gambling has been filed in the Illinois General Assembly, and backers say the House could vote on it as soon as this week. Like last year's version, the bill still allows racetracks to install slot machines, something Governor Pat Quinn firmly opposes. Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows spoke with former Illinois House member Bill Black of Danville, who supports the bill. In fact, he chairs the Illinois Revenue and Jobs Alliance, which is lobbying for its passage. Black says the bill won't pass without the section allowing slot machines at racetracks.
If you take out the slot machines at the racetracks, then you take out most of the support downstate. And that key support is from the Illinois Soil and Water Conservation Districts, Illinois County Fairs Association, and other agricultural-focused groups. But if they don't get anything out of this bill, you lose a key part of the support for the bill as it's written.
Well, if this bill is to pass this spring, and if the governor is still adamant about that part of it, it sounds like it will need a veto-proof majority in both chambers. Do you think it has that?
I think it probably has that, or close to it, in the Senate. But I think we're at about 62 votes, 63 votes in the House. That's enough to pass it, but we need 70 if we're to make it a veto-proof vote in the House. That is something that we're working on and talking to people and trying to see what we can do with the governor. I have found Governor Quinn to be a fair man, and I think he has a full agenda, and he's trying very hard to get this state out of its fiscal nightmare. All I would say to him is, Governor, this bill will help you get out of your fiscal nightmare, plus put people to work. And I think that's why it is worthy of support.
When your contact with the Alliance called me this morning, he said he thought that a vote could come on this bill as soon as Wednesday. You've just said that you don't think the support in the House is there yet for a veto-proof majority. Do you think it's going to come up that quickly?
It could, and it could as a test vote. If the bill is called and gets 58 votes, 59 votes, but the supporters see that it doesn't have the 70 votes required, they can pull the bill and put it on postponed consideration, or they can just simply pull the bill and see where they can get the additional 7, 8, 9 votes they might need.
Let me run this scenario past you and tell me what you think would happen. The bill passes with the support it has now, and the governor uses his amendatory veto on it to get rid of the slots at the racetracks but keeps the rest. What happens then?
Then the multiple groups that support the bill would have to come together and say, well, is that something that we will or can accept, or is it something that destroys the coalition? And we would then urge the General Assembly to take whatever action the group added. But we would not control that. If the Speaker of the House or the sponsor of the bill decides that there will be a vote on the amendatory veto, the chairman of the bill could say he could move to accept the governor's amendatory veto, or he could move to reject the governor's amendatory veto, in which case the bill would fail. In other words, there'd be no vote. The bill would just not be called for a vote. If they would move to accept the governor's mandatory veto, then you may end up with portions of the bill, but there are a lot of groups that would have to come together and give some direction on that. And I wouldn't hazard a guess as to what that reaction would be if you took the slots at racetracks out.
Former legislator and current Danville Alderman Bill Black, chairman of the Illinois Revenue and Jobs Alliance. The group is made up of supporters of Illinois gambling expansion, including the city of Danville. The gambling expansion bill would allow for a casino to open in Danville. Black says Danville needs a casino for the jobs and tax revenue it would provide. Coming up tomorrow, we will hear from a longtime gambling opponent, Anita Bedell, of the group Illinois Church Action on Alcohol and Addiction Problems. A new international terminal at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport opens today. The $1.4 billion project includes 12 new gates and 8 security checkpoints. It's designed to allow international travelers to bypass Atlanta's main terminal. NPR's Kathy Lohr has this report.
The new terminal doesn't look like any you've probably seen. Huge windows provide a spectacular view of airplanes taking off and taxiing. A Swarovski crystal chandelier gleams nearby, and waves of blue lights highlight the ceiling.
It's just amazing. It's a wow factor for our customer.
Deputy General Manager of the airport, Balram Biodari, says even jaded travelers are impressed. The vast expanse with lots of natural light is intended to have a calming effect on passengers who are stressed out after a long flight. Beyond the aesthetics, he has higher hopes for the new terminal.
This airport will be one of those key decisions that we feel that international business will make in moving to the state of Georgia or to the city of Atlanta. There's all sort of potential for businesses, for other activity to mushroom around this airport.
Both Georgia's governor and Atlanta's mayor have made attracting international business a priority. The state has won auto manufacturing and parts companies, suppliers for Coca-Cola, and logistics companies over the past decade. Earlier this week, construction was still going on at the new Terminal F. Concession booths and restaurants are being built and stocked. Finishing touches are being added. One big change, international travelers now won't have to recheck their bags after going through customs in order to exit from the airport. That's been one of the biggest complaints from international travelers whose final destination is Atlanta. More than 90 million passengers moved through Hartsfield-Jackson last year. The forecast is for a 30% increase in three more years. As domestic routes have become more costly, airlines have been consolidating. Hometown carrier Delta has continued to add profitable routes, but the airline recently cut some international destinations, including Shanghai, Athens, and Moscow.
The immediate benefits will be modest, I believe. The overall benefits, I think, in the long term may be quite substantial.
Bruce Seaman is an economics professor at Georgia State University. Travel from the U.S. to Asia, Latin America, and South America is predicted to grow. And Seaman says Atlanta was willing to pay $1.4 billion for the expansion to be ready to capture that market.
But again, you've got to keep it in perspective. We're talking about 12 additional gates. You've got flights that are being cut back by some major airlines like Delta. And so this is definitely an investment in the future, not the present.
Some analysts say the new terminal is a much-needed draw at a time when all airports are vying for the same international business. Craig Lesser is with the Pendleton Consulting Group.
The world's a competitive place. Travelers are interested in convenience. They're interested in facilitation. And this is another step to maintain that cutting-edge position that Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport has had in the last 20, 25 years.
The new terminal also has a bit of whimsy. An interactive exhibit called Light Waves uses sound, music, and colored lights as a distraction. It's part of the effort to calm travelers, and if nothing else, it's entertaining. Kathy Lohr, NPR News, Atlanta.
Listeners like you appreciate and enjoy programming that consistently offers balanced news, enlightening information, and quality entertainment. Have you thought of including WILL in your estate plans? Our Legacy Circle members provide for the station for years to come by investing in the future of WILL. Contact your financial advisor or call Don DeBeard at 217-333-7300 or go online at will.illinois.edu/support.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 16th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet who said, "You must write and read as if your life depended on it." She said, "Poetry is the liquid voice that can wear through stone." Adrienne Rich, born in Baltimore, 1929, who passed away this March from complications of rheumatoid arthritis. It was on this day, 1763, James Boswell and Samuel Johnson met for the first time. Johnson was 53, well-known man of letters, and James Boswell was 22, a big admirer. Johnson had recently finished a 42,000-word dictionary of the English language, which he did almost single-handedly. Boswell was hanging around Johnson's favorite bookshop, and one day the two of them were introduced. Johnson was a little prickly at the beginning, but Boswell persisted, and over time Johnson began to warm to him. Boswell took notes in shorthand whenever the two of them were together, and he kept trying to get Johnson to talk about himself, which annoyed Johnson. Johnson said, "Sir, you have but two topics, yourself and me. I am sick of both." But they enjoyed each other's company enough to go off on a tour of the Scottish Highlands in 1773, and Boswell wrote a book about it, which turned out to be the first installment of his magnum opus, The Life of Samuel Johnson, a great biography when it came out in 1791. It's the 100th birthday of Studs Terkel, born in the Bronx in New York, 1912, just 3 weeks after the Titanic sank. Family moved to Chicago when he was 11. His mother opened a boarding house where young Terkel met the sort of working-class intellectuals, workers, activists, who would become so influential on his life's work. Studied law at the University of Chicago, never practiced, started writing plays, worked as a radio producer. And when he was 55, a publisher approached him about producing a book of interviews with ordinary Americans. That book came out in 1967, Division Street, America, and it launched a new career for Turkle as an oral historian. Died in October 2008 at the age of 96. His last book came out the following month, P.S. Further Thoughts from a Lifetime of Listening. And it was on this date in 1918 Congress passed the Sedition Act, which made it illegal to utter, print, write, or publish any disloyal, profane, or abusive language about the form of the government of the United States. It was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court and then repealed by Congress in 1920. Here's a poem for today by Erica Jong, People Who Live. People who live by the sea understand eternity. They copy the curves of the waves, their hearts